But the more I studied Bitcoin, the more I found that for me, there was a lot of alignment with the philosophy behind it, the structure of it, what it was designed to do, what it did do. It was just a really nice fit. And then from there, I was able to develop, basically just like work that into my business. And now what I do is work with family offices, helping them responsibly buy Bitcoin, understand it. I help them with portfolios that offer downside risk mitigation, anything that can help people to become more educated, understand it more deeply. Basically, if they own it or never own it, I've done my job if I can talk to them about it in a way that they understand it. That for me is actually the most important.
A lot of people did not want to acknowledge it. They did not want to embrace it. I mean, there's that funny story about the guy who bought a pizza with Bitcoin or whatever, and like now that pizza would be like hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever.
So from 1913 to 2020, the US dollar lost roughly 90% of its purchasing power. In 1913, you could buy 30 Hershey's chocolate bars for a dollar. But by 2020, those same chocolate bars cost $26.14.
So I guess maybe at a high level, like explain what it is and how it works. Like obviously everybody has heard of Bitcoin, but why is it important to the space? Like why did it come to be, I guess, right? I'm assuming a lot of it has to do with the fact that we are becoming a more global economy. That is probably one aspect to it. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Financial Mastery Simplified. I am your host, Jacqueline or Jax Kreider. Today we have Mr. Eric Runge on, and he is a financial planning expert in the space for over 20 plus years, although he believes a little differently in some of the traditional viewpoints about financial planning. So as where most people are, you know, the traditional stocks, bonds, etc., he really likes to add a lot of Bitcoin kind of into the mix. And so we're going to kind of get into that a little bit. That's kind of, I know a lot of people are confused about Bitcoin. I don't even totally understand it myself. So we'll kind of dive into a few of these paths. So welcome, Eric. Tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and why you're excited to be on the show today.
Thanks, Jax. Really nice to be here. Yeah. So I'm in a little town called Madras, Oregon, in central Oregon. I've been in, like you said, the financial space for over 20 years. I was never really a fit in the retail space, just sort of slinging stocks and bonds. I could do it, never really felt like a fit. I didn't really know that until I came upon Bitcoin. And it was a passion of mine personally before I could ever offer anything to my clients. But the more I studied Bitcoin, the more I found that for me, there was a lot of alignment with the philosophy behind it, the structure of it, what it was designed to do, what it did do. It was just a really nice fit. And then from there, I was able to develop, basically just like work that into my business. And now what I do is work with family offices, helping them responsibly buy Bitcoin, understand it. I help them with portfolios that offer downside risk mitigation, anything that can help people to become more educated, understand it more deeply. Basically, if they own it or never own it, I've done my job if I can talk to them about it in a way that they understand it. That for me is actually the most important.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally agree. Actually, almost every brand that I hold, so my main mortgage company piece, as well as the Financial Mastery Simplified piece, the core values of the brands are educate, empathize, empower, and educate, equip, empower, because I firmly believe that you don't necessarily have to agree with me on everything. You don't have to, you know, do everything I would do. But if you have the right information, right, and you're able to figure out what that looks like for you and how it might fit in your world, right, then you can go ahead and use that information. So we are very, very aligned on this. And, you know, it's interesting, even though I am very heavily in the financial space, I don't do as much on the investing side. My husband likes to really nerd out on numbers like that. He's a really, really smart guy. He was like doing aeronautical engineering at a school called Brooklyn Technical High School. You have to like test to get into it. When he was growing up in New York City. And so because he's always kind of nerded out on that, he does more of that than I do on that side. But Bitcoin is kind of a fascinating thing to me because, first of all, I kind of like anything that disrupts spaces because I've never exactly been a rule follower by any stretch. I don't really fit in the box. And I also think that there's a lot of misunderstanding surrounding it, right? Because at first, when it came out, a lot of people did not want to acknowledge it. They did not want to embrace it. I mean, there's that funny story about the guy who bought a pizza with Bitcoin or whatever. And like now that pizza would be like hundreds of thousands of dollars or whatever if he had bought it now. So I guess maybe at a high level, like explain what it is and how it works. Like obviously everybody has heard of Bitcoin, but why is it important to the space? Like why did it come to be, I guess, right? I'm assuming a lot of it has to do with the fact that we are becoming a more global economy. That is probably one aspect to it, but I'd love to hear your kind of insight or thought process through that.
Yeah, great question. So you talk about space disruption, and that's key, I think, to understanding it. The very first block of transactions, when Satoshi Nakamoto, who is the mysterious, opaque creator or releaser, at least, of Bitcoin into the world, with the very first block of transactions inscribed onto that block was Chancellor on the brink of second bailout for banks. And that was a newspaper headline. And that happened in the context of the 2008 financial crisis. And so there was a very self-conscious sort of countercultural is not quite the right word, counter system launched to Bitcoin. I think really to understand Bitcoin as in terms of what its design and intent is, you have to go back and understand what the problem is that Bitcoin is designed or trying to solve.
Okay.
So if we go clear back to 1971, and there's a website called WTF Happened in 1970.com. That's, I found, very revelatory. What happened was, in 1971, the U.S. was 6 times more in debt than we had the gold reserves to back it up.
Right.
And so Nixon, feeling the strain of that, goes on TV, and you can actually pull the YouTube clips on this, and he temporarily delinks the dollar from gold. Well, it used to be, many of your listeners probably already know this, if you had a dollar bill, you could go and redeem that for a certain amount of gold. Nixon suspends temporarily this ability to do that. And he did it temporarily, yet here we are in 2025, and we are still temporarily off the gold standard.
Right.
So what happened from there is inflation jumped to about 10% per year for at least the next 5 years. And then a whole bunch of seemingly unrelated like events started lining up. Prison rates started to go through the roof. The prevalence of single families with one person working, that disappeared. Two people started to have to work in families to support the families. Black-white income was on a path toward equality. It was moving much more quickly toward equality. After 71, a much larger divergence started to happen. So there were all of these cultural, and a lot of people don't know that in the current sort of race debates and things. I find that that's never brought up. I think that's very important and really important to understand. What we find is that all of these things happened starting in 1971. And so what happened was when Nixon introduced the world to fiat currency, it created a different incentive structure for people's behavior. And so we could talk about that for, you know, hours upon end. But long story short is that government debt skyrocketed, government spending skyrocketed.
Yes.
And it created a system in which the US dollar more rapidly lost purchasing power.
Correct.
So from there, families are now forced into, or I should say not forced, but the incentive is to begin to seek risk on assets like stocks, bonds, real estate in order to preserve purchasing power.
Right.
Okay. So
because you basically, what you're saying, like from a very simple concept is that you're trying to keep up or outpace what the dollar is losing, right?
That's right.
Is in essence what you're saying. Because if you literally just go and park $100 in your account, even a couple of weeks, a month, you know, a year from now, it's worth less than it was in that period before.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So from 1913 to 2020, the US dollar lost roughly 90% of its purchasing power. In 1913, you could buy 30 Hershey's chocolate bars for a dollar, but by 2020, those same chocolate bars cost $26.14. And so, if you go to the Visual Capitalist, there's a chart that shows, and they have the research all to back it up. So, so the US dollar historically has tended to lose value. So right about 1974, a group of computer guys started working on digital cash. And this is long before the internet obviously was mainstreamed or even thought of. But each generation of computer guys would work on this idea for digital cash. And then that generation would run into a problem that they couldn't solve. But then the next generation would solve that problem. And then they'd run into their own problem that they couldn't solve. So on and so forth. So by the time 2009 rolls around, Satoshi has basically solved all of the problems that the previous generations couldn't handle. and he releases Bitcoin. So that's kind of a broad overview. I love that your dog is hanging out with you.
Well, we have multiple dogs and one of them is being loud, so apologies or whatever. But yeah, no, that's interesting. Well, and it is very true. I have said, and it's so funny because, you know, I told you before the show, I have a law degree and everybody could not understand why I had such a problem with us being in lockdown in 2020, right? And I said, what you have to understand is that it's a very slippery slope. When we start taking away freedoms, right? And you're giving the government the ability to like lock you into your home, this is never a good look. And it's kind of the same thing when there's no check on spending and, you know, inflation is going all over the place because you, the end user, right? Like it's affecting you and there hasn't been anything in check or whatever. And it has been a problem. And I mean, we definitely have seen the effects. Well, and I mean, think about when the 2008-2009 crisis happened, it really wasn't the little guys that got bailed out. It was the banks, right? Like they couldn't let them fail. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I mean, I sat in the epicenter of a lot of those things and I know like, This is an interesting fact. So Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, part of what started creating a mass issue with them was the fact that they started buying subprime loans. So originally they did not buy subprime. It was all privately held, done by private investors, right? And so then Fannie and Freddie said that they were interested in buying subprime loans. And so they needed a test case. And so the test company they chose to go to was a company by the name of Centex Home Equity, which then became NationStar, which then became Mr. Cooper. And so it's taken several different names over the course of time. But that's actually, I actually work for that company. I work for the company that basically, in essence, they decided to use as a subprime test. They were actually a really good underwriter of subprime loans, and they did not take a look at how that not all subprime loans were created equal and not all the underwriting guidelines were the same. Like they weren't standardized across of the board, like how they were in other aspects of mortgage. And so it's very interesting the way that some of that rolled down, but it's interesting that the American public really is the one that took it in the shorts because, I mean, we saw for years afterwards, right, people struggled to be able to get houses because they were in foreclosure, right, because of the crash or they lost jobs and they lost income. I mean, it's why I think a lot of times that I think people need to understand how the systems work and what operates them, what makes them work behind the scenes, but they shouldn't necessarily lean in and just do what society is telling you because it's not always in your best interest. They're going to make it seem like it's in your best interest always, but it's not necessarily always in your best interest, right? And so you have to start doing the research and the understanding. And then you also have to start asking yourself hard questions about like what matters to you and how does that operate? And so Bitcoin, and help me understand because it started out as a digital currency and what gave it value? Because like we know that at least originally with the dollar, it was gold. We took it off that standard as you so, you know, eloquently put, but what is giving, I mean, that's the other thing too, is like when we start talking about money in a very conceptual sense, I tell people all the time, it's really fake because it is. I mean, money, it's not really a real thing, right? Like we give it value and like we, you know, whatever, but like, money didn't exist like, you know, thousands and thousands of years ago. Like there was no such thing, yeah. Right? We traded goods or something instead.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. So it's helpful to understand what fiat currency is. First of all, the word fiat simply means by decree or because I said so. So Robert Breedlove has made the point that in Genesis, in the first book of the Bible, outside of one's religious affiliation, when the Bible says God spoke things into existence, he said, let it be, therefore it was. That is a description of fiat. It's because I say so. And so when we have fiat currency, it's the government saying, because I say so. It has value because I say so. So people will ask, what gives Bitcoin its value? And that's a fair question. The other question is, what is Bitcoin backed by? I find it helpful to flip that question and say, well, what is gold backed by? Well, gold is not backed by anything except its own inherent qualities, which the market over time determined are valuable. So when you look at gold's inherent qualities, you have scarcity. It's pretty hard to produce. You can produce more of it, but it's dangerous. It costs insurance money. It's blood, sweat, and tears, right? So that it's sort of in very nature creates a sort of scarcity to it, but it's also recognizable. It's pretty hard to fake. It's durable. As opposed to, like, let's say that we wanted to use oranges for currency. Well, they'd last about 2 weeks and you're safe and they'd rot. Gold can last thousands of years and not go bad, you know, that sort of thing. So there are all these inherent qualities. Now, when we take that same question and map it over to Bitcoin, it's tempting to say, well, Bitcoin is ethereal and it's stateless. It only has value because people agree that it has value. Some people think that. Other people think that Bitcoin's inherent qualities, like fixed absolute scarcity, portability, its weightlessness, the fact that you can move $100 million of Bitcoin from New York to Dubai at 11:31 on a Saturday night with a beer in your hand, try doing that with gold. That'd be very difficult.
Right.
So,
or even most other money. I mean, because of the way that it has to flow through financial institutions, there's, you know, a huge amount of law, you know, surrounding them, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, that's right. So Bitcoin has these certain things in it that are inherent to its design. And the fact that, like, I don't know what happened to the Fort Knox audit that Doge was supposed to do, but we heard that it was going to be a thing. And then I haven't heard much about it since then. Who knows exactly why that is? But what we do know is you can audit Bitcoin from your phone sitting in rush hour traffic if you want to. So it's very transparent.
Transparency. Yeah.
That's right. And the question is, does the market want or need those qualities? And there's really no way for you or I to answer that right here and right now. Say definitively, yes, the market does want those things. I can't say. What we can say is that the market will tell us over time if the market wants that thing. So Bitcoin has value because it's agreed upon, because of those inherent characteristics to its design. But then it will have value ultimately because the market monetizes it. And if it remains resilient, i.e. there are competing coins, which there are, or competing assets, which there are, and the market ultimately decides, no, we're going to keep pouring money into Bitcoin because that's where we feel is the most value or the safest or where we want to ride out the volatility or just any, for whatever reasons, the market will tell us if Bitcoin ultimately has value over time.
Yeah, that's so true. And it's so interesting. I mean, I think that when it comes to any of this conversation, the hard part for most people is it's easier to just have the easy button and be told this is what you do, right? And so traditionally that has been your stocks, your bonds, you know, your real estate or whatever it is that people, you know, say. I think personally, I like real estate a little bit better because it is like an actual tangible thing. You know what I mean? Like slightly more faith, I guess, in the tangible thing than I do in, like, you know, some of the kind of the conceptual aspects. However, it just really goes to show you too, though, that you shouldn't put all your eggs in one basket. Only just listen to, the experts that are kind of on the side of Wall Street, etc. Because I mean, I tell people all the time, I mean, all this stuff is just big business, right? And you have to look at, like, be realistic, look at the end users of, like, who is getting the most money, right? And how that works. And so, you know, you use the system the most you can to your advantage, and you figure out how that needs to look and what you need to do. Just like I tell people all the time that debt isn't the enemy. It's only the enemy if you don't know how to use it correctly, right? Or if you're doing it out of desperation, then it's a different, you know, different situation, different scenario. Bitcoin, I think the positive here is that, first of all, it's making us a little bit more universal in some of our aspects, because there is a lot of volatility, right, in government, especially right now. You know, there's a lot of things changing. I don't know if you've heard this, but because of the influence of AI and the things that are changing, they say by 2027, we are going to come to a different form of consciousness. And as we sort of reshape our consciousness with all of these aspects like AI, I wonder if it's going to become more and more prevalent to look for things like Bitcoin, right? That have a little bit more universal appeal, that have a little bit more appeal to people that are sort of thinking outside the box, that aren't just pinned in by traditional conformative structures and are willing to kind of go outside their comfort zone, I guess, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think Bitcoin plays by its own rules, and it doesn't really care if I could personify Bitcoin, it does not appear to care what anybody thinks of it. It doesn't appear to care what the rules are or aren't. It just operates according to its protocol and code. And every 10 minutes, a block is confirmed and it just keeps going. Doesn't matter what Trump says or what Biden did say or what whoever the next person that we crazily elect is gonna say. It doesn't care about that. It doesn't care about social issues, racism, none of it. It just keeps confirming blocks. And that's what Bitcoin does.
Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this message from our sponsors.
Welcome to Financial Mastery Simplified, your go-to podcast for making smart money decisions. We break down complex financial topics into easy-to-understand advice you can use every day. Our experts cover everything from budgeting and saving to investing and retirement planning. We give you the tools to take control of your money and build the future you want. With Financial Mastery Simplified, you'll feel informed and empowered to make the best choices for your financial health. Tune in to Financial Mastery Simplified on your favorite podcast platform. Start your journey to financial confidence today.
Visit us at fms.tips and fms.college for more information.
Welcome to House U, where we believe in the power of education. At House U, we're more than just a brand. We're your partner in home ownership, dedicated to educating, equipping, and empowering you every step of the way. Education is at the heart of everything we do. We offer comprehensive resources designed to make home ownership simple and accessible for all. From understanding mortgage options to mastering home maintenance, House U provides the knowledge you need to make informed decisions with confidence. We host workshops and seminars, bringing together experts and community members to share insights and build a stronger, more informed community. Because when you're educated, you're empowered. House U, home ownership made simple for all. Visit our website or contact us today to start your journey with House U. Empower yourself with knowledge and embrace the joy of home ownership.
Thanks for your patience. Now back to our conversation.
Well, and so because it is very computer generated, and I know, of course, like mining Bitcoin, obviously, like is a thing and stuff like this, etc. There is a little bit of concern, and because I know I've heard crazy stories about people losing their Bitcoin because they had it on something they lost or whatever. So if you are trying to go down this path of understanding Bitcoin and then investing in it, like, what are the best practices to keep in mind, right, as far as some of these things go?
Great question. The first best practice in my view is to study Bitcoin. The first goal I would want to direct somebody on is study Bitcoin for an hour and then go for 10 hours and then 100 and then 1,000 and then just let it take you from there. If you can, that's a tall ask, but 1 hour is doable for anybody.
For sure.
There are a lot of things to keep in mind for Bitcoin as far as risks, safety concerns, that sort of thing. First of all, Bitcoin is probably the most volatile asset in the world.
Right.
So let's be really transparent about that. Bitcoin has endured drawdowns of 50%, sometimes 90%+. That can be really difficult to ride out. So you have to know what you're owning and what you're holding, lest you get washed out in one of these drawdowns and sell at the exact wrong time. So
Correct.
That's really important to know. Other things, if you're going to hold what we call on-chain Bitcoin, direct Bitcoin, not a Bitcoin ETF, which is like a mutual fund of sorts for Bitcoin, that's a different animal altogether. But if you're just going to say, I'm going to own raw straight Bitcoin, there are a few things. You have to figure out how you're going to buy it. You can buy it on an exchange like Coinbase or Kraken or Binance. There are some custody issues there that a lot of people are not aware of. Like whenever you buy Bitcoin or you set up a wallet, there is a key. There are keys and it's a passcode, as it were, to access your Bitcoin. Well, anybody who has your keys, that's like a key to a safety deposit box. Anybody who
right.
has your keys
can come get,
can
it.
Get your Bitcoin. That's right. And so if you hold, you need to know, there's no right or wrong way to do it, but a person needs to know, hey, if I have a Bitcoin on Coinbase or Robinhood, I actually don't have access to my keys. A lot of people don't even know to ask that question. But who holds your keys is really important. Let's say that you become aware of that and you go, no, I don't want anybody else to have my keys. I don't even know anybody at Coinbase. I'm going to hold my keys. All right, perfect. If that's a good fit for you, great. What if that person then goes and writes their keys down on a piece of paper? Well, that sounds like it could be good. But what if they leave that paper on the counter and they go for dinner and they come home and their house is burned down. Well, their keys have burned down, their Bitcoin is gone. So there are other security considerations, like in terms of owning your keys. Do you split your keys up into different pieces so that, you know, if somebody gets one of the parts, they can't steal the others, that sort of thing. So those are just a few questions that I always try to encourage people to think about. What's funny is I find that regular people, normal working people, family offices who have $100 million, all at this point in history tend to make the same mistakes because Bitcoin is so new. Even very well-educated people don't know what questions they even should be asking. And that's understandable. That's like why I have a job, because I love this stuff.
Well, no, I mean, but it is important because I think a lot of times people shy away from new things or really exploring different options because of fear, right? It's uncomfortable. It is unusual, right? It, you know, et cetera. And I think a lot of times when you're trying to kind of live your life on your own terms, which is sort of the premise of what my podcast is all about, I think sometimes you really have to, you know, you have to do some research on your own. You have to be willing to step out there, right? And understand, you know, what is good and what is bad. And honestly, I think people should be doing it with anything because I think a lot of times they think they understand. Like, I mean, I give the example in mortgage all the time. Like, I can't tell you how often we hear from people, like the very first question they have for me is, what's your interest rate? And I'm like, look, I'm not saying that that's not important. It's definitely a factor in the mortgage, right? And it definitely affects what your payment is and all these different things. But there's so many other questions that you should be asking, right? Like, how many different places can I put your loan through? You know, what kind of products do you offer? Like, how deep do you go into all my finances to understand what it is that I need, right? Because not every loan is created equal and there's thousands of different products and options and all these different things, right? And so I actually wrote a book called Mortgage 101, The Secret Sauce of Home Buying, where I give a lot of this context, right? About why are these things? Why do they happen? Why do they matter? What kind of questions should you be asking? Because I think it's super important for us about anything in our lives to be curious. And instead of being curious, what we are is we just outsource our power and we just say, oh, well, society gave me this nice, neat little checklist. And so I'm just going to go down and I'm just going to check the boxes. And if I do all these things, then I'm successful. And I think we're finding that we're in a day and age where literally anything is possible. I mean, you can do so many things, so many different ways to invest money, so many different ways to make money, so many different ways to do all these different things. And instead of doing that, we're stepping back and giving somebody else our checkbook to write the blank checks with our life. And I just don't understand it, which is why I think it's so important to have conversations like these, because you need to kind of be in awareness and say, ooh, that's kind of interesting. Like I kind of think Bitcoin might be something that I want to take a look at or invest in, or how do I mine it? Maybe I can do some mining of it and not even have to spend my own dollars through it. You know what I mean? And mining more of a time situation than a money aspect?
Yeah, the miners have an important role to play as far as the security of Bitcoin and security
transactions.
Why is
that?
Because if I could break down mining, sort of the essence of it is miners are computers, not people, but a mining computer basically solves a very complex math equation in order to confirm a Bitcoin transaction on the blockchain. And that's why it's auditable, because all of that leaves a paper trail. And so you've got thousands of computers competing for who can solve that complex equation the quickest. Then what happens is the reward for that mining computer solving that transaction is they're rewarded in a certain amount of Bitcoin. Then the person who owns the computer can either have that Bitcoin or they can cash it in for fiat or whatever. It's a different business and a different business model altogether, but miners are very, very important, obviously.
Right.
Yes, for the security.
Not necessarily suggesting that that be the path anybody walks down, but if you happen to be a super huge math nerd and you want to figure out that aspect of the computers and things like that or whatever, because I know that there's quite a few high school students in the Frisco area that have actually worked through computers to do some mining and things like that or whatever, because they very math kind of centric people and things like that. But yes, that's interesting. I didn't understand what their purpose was, but that does make sense that basically They're sort of like, is the best way to look at them almost like a white hat hacker?
What do you mean when you say white hat?
White hat meaning that like they're not trying to break in to steal something. They are looking for the ways to ensure that the security exists so that bad people can't get in and take things. You know, like Bank of America hires a white hat hacker. And what they do is they literally look for the places that might be weak in the system so that so that they're not protected, in essence.
So this is, that's an interesting way to map that. I would say both yes and no, that's true. Because okay. Bitcoin is decentralized. There is no single point of authority that can control Bitcoin. And so it makes sense when you say that a given centralized entity like a bank will hire a white hat hacker to exploit its inefficiencies. But Bitcoin, I would say, almost has built into its protocol the disincentive to hack Bitcoin. Because so in order to hack one block of transactions, just one block of transactions, Michael Saylor, a Bitcoin billionaire and the owner of Strategy, has commented that it would take more computing power than all of the United States Navy in order to do that. Well, the cost
of that,
it's crazy. And it's never been successfully done. But Bitcoin is a $2.3 trillion asset. So it would make sense, maybe, for somebody to hack.
Somebody would try.
Somebody would try, but it hasn't been hacked yet in that regard. From an incentive point of view, if I hacked a block of transactions, it would highly likely compromise the value of Bitcoin itself. So I would spoil my own spoils by hacking
Bitcoin. I see what you're saying.
Yes. So yep. The incentive structure is for me to actually do the right and the honest thing, go work, use that to buy Bitcoin.
Interesting. It's a very interesting concept. And I think maybe some of that conceptual idea is where people struggle with it, right? Because it is sort of like the, like you said, there's like an ethical incentive to do the right thing versus yes. What the difference is with every other kind of asset, right? There's the incentive to not do the right thing, to do the, you know, that you can succeed by, you know, hacking into the bank and stealing a bunch of money and things like that or whatever. So that is a very interesting concept that I never thought about and or realized about Bitcoin. Do you deal in other forms of cryptocurrency or predominantly just Bitcoin?
Simply just Bitcoin, no other cryptos. My thinking and the way that I try to structure my thinking is Bitcoin, not crypto. So yeah, there are other cryptos. Some of them have a good utility value and are designed for different purposes other than what Bitcoin was designed for. And I don't deny that they might serve a purpose. None of them are my passion. And in my opinion, other cryptocurrencies, none of them have the same inherent qualities of Bitcoin that make its design and structure unique. And the reason that Bitcoin was designed from a core values point of view already resonated with that which are my core values to begin with. So it was, for me, it was a match made in heaven as far as that went.
Yeah. No, I love that. Well, and I mean, it's so important. One of the things we talk about a lot on the podcast is intentionality and alignment. And I like that the reason that you're so invested in it is because basically it is aligned in what you want to do, how you want to live your life, right? And that's a very intentional choice, because that's the other thing is I don't necessarily think there is wrong things. I just think you have to be a realist and understand how mechanically does it work? How, you know, what is the thought process behind it, right? Like, what's the driving force? How can you use it to be successful in your life in the way that you are looking for, right? And if not yes. this, then this. And it's that beauty of independent thought. And I think the reason that so often a lot of us don't feel like we are yielding or having the level of success we want in life is because we haven't stepped back and figured out not only what are we inherently good at, but like how does what we're inherently good at align with our value set and with what we're looking to do with our lives, right? And kind of propel that forward, right? Whether we use the traditional means, because you can make a lot of money, right? Doing regular stocks, bonds, like there's definitely merit in that. And to your point, Bitcoin is amazing, but can be fairly volatile. And so, you know, if you have a bunch of money that you don't want to have so much volatility, then maybe some of the more safe and structured investments in certain aspects, right, is a good idea, along with that a more volatile aspect as well, right? Kind of balance it all out. But it's just, you know, like I said, it's just such an interesting time that we're in because of all of these different things. Sometimes you're gonna have to do some research and take a flyer out, right? And say, okay, I'm gonna test something out. And for some people that might be a little scary, but I definitely think, and I think the funny thing is, I think my husband and I actually own some Bitcoin. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I know at one point he did. I just didn't ever understand exactly how it works because he nerds out on that. He and you would probably talk for the next 20 years about all these different aspects or whatever. He like likes to go dig super, super deep. But that is super, that's super fascinating though, like how that kind of all operates. You have any kind of last minute thoughts or feedback or takeaways that people can, you know, when they're kind of diving down this path that they should sort of look into?
I would say once you get a taste for Bitcoin education, it can be very easy to go, whoa, I've gotten myself into a huge mess here. There's so much to learn that it's incredibly intimidating and I'm scared to even continue on. And that's understandable. My experience was that with my clients, I was fascinated with Bitcoin, never scared of it, just dove in and continued to dive in. And then I would try to educate my clients through presentations and things, and they would track, follow along, see what I meant and agree. And then I would help them buy Bitcoin. And then when I would check in with them, what I had found is that a lot of times they just sort of put it back up on the shelf and sometimes would even refer to it as the failed Bitcoin experiment, even though we had successfully purchased Bitcoin, they had held it and even made money by holding it. It was by definition successful. And so what I thought was, I sort of realized, gosh, not everyone's cut out for this. Not everybody's going to have the same passion that I do. And that is completely okay because people are built different to be passionate about different things.
For
and
sure.
I realized, okay, so if I am going to be passionate about this and love the concept of it, I still want to bridge that gap for people who do not necessarily want to spend hours studying it, not because they're dumb or uneducated, but because they're just not called to do it. Their passion lies in helping animals or helping children or just any number of different things, right? Medicine or whatever. So I determined at that point, it started to form for me. I need to be a gap. I need to bridge the gap rather between where people are at and where I'm at to help them understand this a little bit better. So I would say dive into Bitcoin as much as you have the capacity. But for some people, it's like eating a whole chocolate cake for dinner and you just never pull it off. And so that's okay. That's why people like me exist. And that's why I love talking to people about Bitcoin.
Well, no, and I think you make a good point that we talk about a lot too, is like you definitely have to have some awareness and understanding of like what the thing is and how the thing works and like, you know, whether it's for you or not. And then once you've kind of determined that, figured that part out, at that point, now we need to find the expert that maybe can help take us to the next level, number one. And then number two, you know, isn't going to lead us, you know, down the wrong path or whatever, right? Maybe they're not going to make every perfect decision, but I definitely think that a lot of people put a lot of pressure on themselves, me included, to understand everything. And let's be real. I mean, even though I'm a very smart person and very capable, I probably couldn't even come close to what you know about Bitcoin, not just because of the spans of time you've been doing it, you know, prior to me, but then also because I don't have the time to dedicate to it, right? Yes. At this moment and juncture in my life. And so it's helpful for me to find somebody. I think, have you ever read the book, Who Not How?
That's exactly what I was just about to say. I was going to reference that exact book, Benjamin Harvey.
Yeah. It's so important because we're so often, and it's so funny, I think society always teaches us that we need to know the how. How does this work? How does this whatever? And I will say that I do think that how matters to a point. Like you do have to know enough about the how to not get hosed, right? Like
that's right. Yeah. It's a balance for everybody.
Correct. So like you can like have a metrics of like, does Eric really know what he's talking about? Or is he just like some kind of snake oil salesman over here just trying to convince me to give him all my money, right? Like what is the balance here? But once you have like a little bit of an understanding of the how, then at that point in time, you just pick that who that really can bridge that gap for you, right? And really make whatever it is that you're looking to invest in or do work to the best of your ability. It's sort of like the cheat code, the shortcut, if you will, right?
I agree.
So This has been an amazing conversation. I guess if people want to kind of figure out how to connect with you, is there a way that they could connect with you that way, Eric?
Yeah, you could send me an email at eric@veritaswealth.net. Check out my website, familyofficebitcoin.com. And those are a couple of ways to get hold of me. I also have a YouTube channel at Family Office Bitcoin.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so I mean, if you guys are looking to dive into the Bitcoin realm and understand a little bit more, this is a great opportunity, right? To be able to kind of learn, nerd out a little bit or whatever. And so hopefully this episode was helpful just to kind of frame up, you know, a different way of thinking. I know probably a lot of listeners are maybe already invested in Bitcoin, but just a good idea to kind of have an understanding of how it works, how it does what it does. What do you need to know if you're starting to try to maybe go down some of these paths? And so thank you so much, Eric, for your expertise. And we look forward to seeing you again next week on another episode of Financial Mastery Simplified.